Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Saving Lives in Slow Motion. Today, I'd like to talk about pain. When I was training as a medical student, one of the books that we used to carry around was colloquially known as the Cheese and Onion Oxford Handbook of Medicine, and it's sort of pocket sized so that you could carry it around in your white coat back in those days when we used to wear white coats and look things up. And in it was this line which said, don't forget how painful pain is. And it always used to make me chuckle a little, but was actually a really useful reminder to make sure that when treating patients who were in pain, that we acknowledged it. Now, I'm glad to say that the brutal practices of yesteryear, where some consultants, particularly in surgical specialties, used to withhold analgesia so that they could tell what clinical signs a patient had, which I think is just cruel personally, those days are gone. And pain is really important in many ways. It's unpleasant, obviously, but I want to kind of find out why it is that some people experience pain more than others, what the mechanisms involved are, and what we can do to manage pain better. So the first thing I notice about pain, and of course I see it in the consulting room on a daily basis, is that there is definitely a psychological component to it, as there is with any other medical condition or symptom. It's not to say it's all in our heads, but for example, if you are cutting up a cucumber and then you nick your finger with the knife and it bleeds, if you don't notice, it doesn't seem to hurt until you notice that it's bleeding, does it? It's not always the case, but very often the case. And in the same way, there are some complex psychological mechanisms involved in the perception of pain, which we'll come to. Now, while we're on that, one group that I really have a lot of sympathy for are those people who suffer with chronic pain. And this is where pain has plagued their life, really, for a significant length of time. And actually, just reading a very recent article on chronic pain, I was personally shocked to find out that in the UK alone, nearly 28 million adults have experienced pain for at least 3 months. That's nearly 44% of the population. Now, just in terms of what happens when you feel pain, I did a finger prick test the other day, a blood test, and anyone who has had to do that kind of thing, or does it regularly if you have diabetes, for example, may know that it doesn't hurt so much when someone else does it, because you don't know when the prick from the lancet is coming. But when I was trying to do it on myself, I was cowering, thinking, oh, you know, even though it's not a huge amount of pain, it's the anticipation of it that makes you feel it. But what happens in that moment when the skin is pierced is, physiologically, your body experiences a stimulus, and the nerve endings from your finger send signals up the spinal cord to the brain. And once it sends signals to, say, the sensory cortex, which is the part of the brain that knows that your hand is experiencing pain, that's when you start to have that experience of pain. There are other parts of the brain that are activated as well, like your reticular formation, which will usually jolt you into action. It's linked to wakefulness and that fight or flight response. But actually, what's happening at the end of the fingertip in terms of nociception, which is the process of what's happening as opposed to pain, which is what you're feeling. So nociception is how your nervous system processes a stimulus, often called a noxious stimulus, like injury or burns. And pain is what you feel as a result. So the pain part is completely subjective. It's different in different people. So unsurprisingly, there are lots of factors like gender, ethnicity, also genetics. There are certain gene variations, like one called COMP, which has a role in regulating dopamine and noradrenaline, and also psychological and cultural inputs as well. Certain cultures just don't pay pain attention, and particularly in certain Asian cultures, there's a real stoicism around pain. Just digressing for a minute onto the flip side, which is how you treat pain with analgesia in the form of anti-inflammatories or opiates, which are opiates, particularly drugs of addiction. And they all work on different receptor pathways that we know are involved in pain. But even they work differently in different people. And that's because certain drugs elicit a better response from certain individuals than others. Okay, so we've kind of laid out that it's a big problem, potentially. Chronic pain in particular. Acute pain, you know, if you, and I don't mean this flippantly, but if you sprain your ankle or pull a muscle in your back now and again, those things are short-lived pain episodes, usually, and you'll recover. But what about those people that actually experience chronic pain, where it's something that is a daily, minute by minute, hour by hour part of their life? Now, I know many people in this situation, and I can tell you that they often live on hope that there are going to be some new frontiers in pain research that will help them. And actually, you know, one of the ones that I see working really well is something called a spinal cord stimulator, which people with intractable leg or back pain really benefit from. What else in terms of what works for pain? Well, there is, of course, doing a 360 on yourself in terms of looking at all the elements about your life, you know, whether you've suffered trauma in the past, what your diet's like, what your movement's like, how much sleep you're getting, what your vitamin D levels are like, all of the things in my health loop, in the health fix. And by doing that, that can certainly take the edge off. But what about cutting edge research? What's the latest in terms of chronic pain? Are there any advances? Well, the answer is yes, hot off the press from California. And of course, I say this with caution because it's not likely that this will become everyday kind of remedy for chronic pain overnight. But the fact that it works in a research setting is really encouraging. So a professor in anesthetics and a pain specialist called Professor Shrivalka has basically found a number of key things. One is that chronic pain and acute pain elicit different signals from the brain. And unlike previous research in this area, which is done by MRI scans that look at parts of the brain that react in different ways, it's called a functional MRI. They essentially light up different parts of the brain. That's not quite accurate, but you know what I mean. This was very different. It was done with electrodes in the brain over a 6-month period. And what it actually enabled him to do was to break down brain signals into electrical waves, which essentially acts as a neural biomarker. So something that happens in the brains of these people that is absolutely and only associated with chronic pain. What was interesting is that those biomarkers were different for acute pain, and the hope is that you can actually use something called deep brain stimulation, which is already used for conditions such as depression, to actually change those frequencies and then hopefully alleviate pain. Remember, pain is an experience. And the exciting thing about this study is that these biomarkers seem to be very specific for chronic pain. And that is so much more targeted than just trying different types of medication, for example, which of course is a starting point. But with chronic pain, often different approaches are needed. So I mentioned earlier about the psychological aspects of pain, and there is this apocryphal story, the British Medical Journal in 1995, and it was a story about a builder who was in his 20s, and he was on a building site, jumped down onto a large nail, and was in absolute agony. And whenever in the A&E department they tried to remove this nail, he would just scream in pain. So they actually put him to sleep to remove the nail. And when they actually removed the boot to take the nail out, it transpired that the nail had gone in between his toes. So there was no injury at all. Now, why that is so fascinating is that it's something, I guess it's an expectation effect, isn't it? He was expecting that to be really painful. And so his brain had convinced him, and this is what I mean about pain being a subjective experience, that it was really painful, yet there was no injury. And on the flip side, you have certain communities that feel no pain. This is, again, fascinating, and this appears to be because of genetic variation. There's a group of three families in Pakistan who feel no pain. And there is this condition or state called congenital insensitivity to pain. It's extremely rare and not always the gift that you think. Because you can't feel pain, you're much more likely to hurt yourself. I think for me in the consulting room also, I've noticed over the years that sometimes you have a patient who on scan or on some sort of imaging, they ought to be in huge amounts of pain, but they're not. And you think, how are you walking around? Whereas in other cases, there appears to be quite a lot of pain, but no diagnosis. And this is fairly common in the realm of conditions like fibromyalgia, where there's no test for the condition. It's more a cluster of symptoms that are lumped together. So what is the best way to minimize pain? Or the experience of pain, at least? Well, when you trawl through the evidence and you match it with people that you've seen in real life, the first thing, undoubtedly, is your frame of mind. If you've got the right kind of thought patterns in terms of not focusing on the pain and you are resilient or you're able to think mindfully, then you are likely to cope with pain better. The second, in my mind, is support. Group consultations seem to work really well for chronic pain. And if you are supported well, whether that's by friends or family or by a peer group, then that appears to help. Think about the opposite. If you're isolated and on your own in pain, it can be much harder. The third is your starting point. Now, everyone is different and we're all born slightly different. So if you've got, if you like, genes that make you predisposed to feeling pain, then that's, you know, unfortunate. But there are still things that you can do, and they are the basics in terms of reducing inflammation. And that means all the basic stuff like eating an anti-inflammatory type diet, making sure that you're moving safely and regularly, good quality sleep, minimizing stress, easier said than done. And making sure that you focus on that first all-important one, which is your frame of mind, or mindset, as I used to refer to it in my very early slides in our prescribing lifestyle medicine course. In any case, pain is as fascinating as it is distressing, and I'm sure you all have lots of stories about it yourself. It can be so distressing, and you know, I don't think anyone forgets the most painful experience they've ever had in terms of physical pain. I hope that's given you a little bit of insight into the mechanics of pain and the why of the why, and also maybe some strategies in terms of minimising it. Do please let me know what you think, and keep suggesting episodes because that really helps, and some of the ideas are wonderful. Keep them coming. I'm getting through them all and just thinking about where to go next. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Do take care, stay well, and until next time, bye for now.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.